Hello, and welcome to the 25th Hour Ideas Podcast with your host, Michael Gallagher. Our goal is to investigate the knowledge, skills, and habits required to build a first-class organization. To do this, we examine topics through the lens of sports, economics, and finance. Taryn Sharma is a lawyer, early member of the Conduct Detrimental team, co-host of two podcasts, co-founder of the NIL Clinic at the University of Minnesota Law School, and so much more. I absolutely loved hearing from Taryn about joining the Conduct Detrimental team, his passion for sports and sports law, relationship building, and a phenomenal success story about finding and developing a community of people passionate about the same thing. So, without further ado, let's get to it. Taryn, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I've very much so been looking forward to hearing about everything you've got going on.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you for inviting me. I'm always happy to chat.
So many things I want to get to, but the one thing that stuck out to me the most when going back through all your experiences is I would have guessed by now, looking back, that you'd be midway through a career working in like sports analytics and operations. Has the plan been law all along? How did that shake out?
Yeah, I don't. I ask myself that also. When I was nearing graduation in Hampton, Sydney, I'd been thinking about going to law school at that point, but I really thought the idea of working in baseball would be really cool, and I decided that I wanted to pursue that opportunity. So that's what I went to Duke and got my master's with the goal of doing, and was ultimately able to pursue that for a couple of years. I had a couple really great experiences with the Diamondbacks and the Giants, and learned so much and got to live that life for a short period of time and met so many amazing people. I think that the answer is that, you know, sometimes that decision is made for you. I didn't have a full-time opportunity in that role. I could have kept pursuing it, doing these one-year gigs and trying to find something more permanent, but it didn't feel like it was necessarily happening for me. I actually received some really good advice. The general manager at the time when I was in San Francisco, it was towards the end of my time there, and I was kind of asking him, you know, what do you think I should be doing? He's a great guy. Bobby Evans is his name. And he told me, you know, you're young now, but you kind of want to move to the next thing and have your goals aligned, because you don't necessarily want to be, you know, 30 years old and you don't have the law degree and you've been doing these year-to-year gigs in baseball chasing this dream. And so that kind of resonated with me. And it was at that point that I moved home and started applying to law school. So in a way, the decision was made for me. And so I'm happy the way that it turned out. I had a great experience.
What were some of the top, I'm sure just that alone, those comments from the general manager, were there other major takeaways you had working for like pro sports organizations?
Yeah, definitely that there's no better feeling than being able to go to a ballpark and have that be your office. That has really stuck with me since I've even left, but especially living in San Francisco and just being able to, you know, walk out of my apartment. I was living a few blocks from the ballpark and just walk down the street and, you know, there's the ballpark, there are the executive offices, and being able to be there. And then, you know, being in these places that have that history, I really thought that was special. But the thing that has probably stuck with me the most is that, you know, I made good friends in both of those places, and being able to remain in contact with them, being able to see them when I go out there, to have them come and see me where I am now. Those have been special things, but working in sports was a tremendous experience, and now I'm kind of adjacent to it.
I feel like having worked in different areas of sports, like for my example, like I worked with, as a student manager with the equipment side, I dabbled and helped with the like video department and like even was seeing what like the nutritionists were doing and all these things. And from your experiences, like being the point of contact between different people and working on the analytical side of things and doing all these different projects, what are the benefits of having this kind of holistic background and having all these different experiences you could blend together?
Well, I think that it's really valuable to understand how different types of people work. I've worked with a lot of different types of people. I've received work from them and had different types of managers. So understanding different types of people, being able to pick up on different cues, I think that that helps in relationship building. And whether it's law or business or anything else, I think that those are relationship-driven businesses. And so if you want to succeed in them, I think that building those relationships is crucial. And so I think that that's something that I've been able to benefit from in having these different experiences. I also think, I like to say like sports is a really good front porch for the rest of my personality. And so I think having those experiences, particularly in sports, any interview that I've ever been in, whether it was for a sports role or anything else, it's just such an interesting thing to talk about. It's a unique experience. It's one that, you know, I feel very lucky to have had. And people want to hear about it. And so being able to share those experiences with other people, I think has paid such great dividends going forward. Even, you know, I'm 5 years removed from working in professional baseball and feel like I'm still getting a ton of value out of those experiences.
Is sports the last commonality or like common talking point that you could have between like strangers pretty much? I don't think it's TV anymore. I don't think it's music. I think it might only be sports.
Well, I was thinking like TV or music might be applicable also, but I think that sports is really like, it's such a great cross-section of people, and different types of sports appeal to different people. Like there was a day earlier this fall, and my fiance and I went to a Vikings game, and then we went to a Minnesota United MLS game, and just seeing the differences in crowds. And so like those are all different people that you would be able to talk about sports with. And I think that's great. It's really cool. And I think about the number of different types of people that I've been able to, you know, sort of share community with as a result of being interested in sports and having that common interest. It's been tremendous. Being able to meet all of those people has been what has added so much value to my life.
And you could even, now that you mentioned that, I'm thinking you could even, and this has happened also to me recently, you could take two fans or people, they could be fans of the same team, like let alone like the different sports. You get a fans of the same team and one person only wants to talk about maybe like recent on-field or on-court performance or something like that. And someone else is interested in, oh, well, they're mismanaging the salary cap or they should have made this move or something like that. So you could be interested in completely different aspects and be rooting for the same team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we really feel that I do the Simply Amazing podcast with Tim Ryder, and we talk about the Mets, and that's the team that I grew up rooting for. And so you'll have all sorts of different talking points within that, the trades that they made, the trades that they didn't make, the lineup management, who they should have signed, and then going back to like, you know, past postseason failures, collapses in the late season. You could talk about any number of things. And I think that there are people that are hung up on any number of those factors, and all of that collectively is what creates, I think, a fan base, because it's shaped by the successes and failures of the team.
That's also something I wanted to ask about the Simply Amazing podcast. I think I listened to your first appearance on the podcast, and I believe you were like a guest or like a co-host, but now you seem to be a regular co-host. How did you make it to, how did you go from not being involved to being a co-host?
Yeah, well, I think for all the ills of social media, it's been a great benefit to me, because so even before Simply Amazing, I was just online trying to talk about sports, trying to really explore that intersection of sports and law. And that's how I found Dan Lust, who does the Conduct Detrimental podcast. And it was through that that I really got my first experiences being recorded, talking about sports, talking about law, and having this experience. And so from that, then I was able to use my experiences working in baseball and my knowledge of how the CBA works to talk about that with Tim on Simply Amazing. And then that was just a really good appearance. I thought we had a really good conversation, and then I heard from him again like a couple months later, hey, do you want to come back on? And so we had another good conversation, and then eventually he just asked me if I wanted to join as a regular co-host. So, and all of that happened on Twitter. Like, I've met Dan Lust one time, and I've never met Tim in person. So the power of social media to bring all of these people together, and especially, you know, during the pandemic era, to have the ability to communicate in that fashion, I think has changed everything for me.
It's crazy, because even like this conversation, for example, I've read your newsletters, I've listened to you on Conduct Detrimental, I heard you on the one episode I listened to of the Simply Amazing podcast, and then it's been like a regular stream of, you've been regularly publishing and putting out all this work, the TikToks, for years now. At this point, it seems like time flies, but it's crazy to untangle these connections. Like, this is only, like you're saying, even this is only possible because of social media. And maybe,
yeah,
I couldn't even tell you how I started following Conduct Detrimental, but like, it all these things are kind of tied together and lead to all these amazing things. And you now you're regularly part of a second podcast because of that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's what I was also saying, just in terms of making those connections and being able to relate to people and building those relationships is crucial to anything that you want to do. So, and I think, you know, credit to Dan and Conduct Detrimental as a whole, I think has lowered the barriers to entry for people to want to do that. Because I don't think that there was a great place for law students. I was a law student at the time that I started talking with Dan, and only recently became a lawyer. Same with Steph, and same with a bunch of our group. And that core group was really just brought together in a pursuit of putting out this news and analysis on subjects that we were interested in. And so I think that Dan in particular deserves a whole bunch of credit for connecting these people, building that network, and also lowering the barriers of entry for other people to participate. He's never gatekept that experience. You know, I told him that I was interested in doing the podcast. He was like, hey, come on, like, let's get you on there. And when I wanted to write, when I wanted to, you know, do the TikToks, he got me involved in that way. And I think that is really grown my confidence and made me feel like I can talk in a educated manner about this space. And that's led to so many other experiences. And I don't think that, you know, the next one doesn't happen without the first one. So I really credit meeting Dan online and finding his videos and being able to talk to him about that with all of the other things that we've been able to do in the world of sports law, which is only just beginning for me.
You might have mentioned this before. How exactly did you first, I'm assuming you had reached out to him like and had seen something he had published or something online?
Yeah, he posted a video. It might have been about Kevin Durant or something like that. And so we connected. I had a phone call with him and he helped me redo my Twitter to make it more professional. He helped me get involved with first video editing and then writing and making my own videos, making my own content, talking on the podcast. Yeah, he's really kind of paved that way for me and for so many others. He's still doing it now. And to have that foresight, you know, for him, because he's still very young, has been so meaningful for so many sports law students. He's a godfather of sports law now. So, yeah, it's that's really helped me get started in this field. Because otherwise, I think it can seem pretty daunting, right? I'm interested in sports and I am a current law student. How do I piece these things together? Or even for non-lawyers, I'm interested in sports. I'm interested in business. Here's also a place that talks about this because many of the people that contribute to our site, our content, are not even lawyers. We're talking with people who are interested in business, people who are interested in journalism. And so I think that building that community has been very special. And I think that that's helped continue to develop this field in a way that wasn't necessarily possible before.
That's exactly, you hit the nail right on the head. I was going to say, I feel like I'm just as much a part, I feel like I'm as welcomed in the community as a listener and being a passive participant as a non-lawyer who's just really interested in the sports and the business aspect. Because I think if I had to trace it back when I was regularly blogging and writing about things, the easiest things to write about were things I was so very interested in that I just couldn't find out about online. You just can't find them written about anywhere. Maybe not so much now, but there are so many niche topics that when the NFL was the most recent collective bargaining agreement and why it was an issue to have to escrow guaranteed money and those negotiations and things like that. Nobody cares. Really nobody cares. Maybe 0.001% of NFL fans care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because then when you go searching for it, I'm pretty sure I found an article when Steph was writing for Full Court Press and then it was publishing articles exactly like that. And I was like, that's someone I would love to learn from and connect with because they are thinking and they're interested in the same things that I'm interested in. And it's easy to stand out. And that's why you're standing out. You're one of I would say the foremost experts in the sports law field. There's a handful of people putting out incredibly thorough and educational content publicly. And you mentioned and I do notice that it's happening that more and more aspiring soon to be lawyers that are appearing on the podcast as well. And it doesn't really change my enjoyment level because consistently the content it's incredible. It's something I always look forward to listening to. And I guess I was going to ask about this later, but it's brick by brick, this great machine kind of being built where it had to have started with Dan and maybe a handful of people. And now you look at the team, website, you look at the conduct detrimental team. I think it was there's 12 people. There's 12 people listed on the team with all unique roles and breakdowns and everything. When you started, how many people were there really as part of the team? And then from then to now, like, what's that growth been like? Because I don't, like, there wasn't always a newsletter, and there wasn't always a TikTok, and there wasn't always these things. So, like, how's that journey come about?
Yeah, well, so jumping back real quick, trying to find things that you're interested in online and, like, where they're talked about. One of the ways I really started interacting with Dan Lust and Dan Wallach a lot is because Zion was being sued by his former marketing agent.
Yes.
And nobody was talking about that. And so, like, I obviously, like, you know, big Duke fan, but I also grew up a big Duke fan. And I desperately wanted to defend Zion and Duke's honor online, okay? And so I couldn't find anywhere that was really, like, talking about this in depth except for Dan Wallach and Dan Lust. And because they were talking about it in depth, I was drawn to their pages more and wanted to interact with them more. And that's really, like, when I started joining their circle. So I think at that point it was Dan Wallach, because Dan Wallach did the original podcast Conduct Detrimental with another sports lawyer named Dan Worley, who is now the general counsel for the Titans. And when Dan Worley left, then he brought Dan Lust on. And so Dan and Dan were doing it. And then they had Mike Lawson producing the podcast. And Mike Lawson is awesome. He is a lawyer in New York. Then it was me. And then Steph shortly thereafter. And Jason Morin shortly thereafter that. So I guess there were three when I started. I was the fourth. And then we were at five or six for quite some time. And in the last year or so, we've started to really push forward. I think we all trust Dan. Like, Dan Lust brought us in for the most part to this. So, you know, we think that the Dans have a vision of where they would like this to go. And so the first step of that was the website. And Steph created that, which is awesome. Like, because she ran Full Court Press, like you mentioned. And so she helped build that website out. And so everyone plays their part, and I'm just happy to be able to be part of that group. I've learned so much as a result of being able to, you know, be in contact with these people.
And something else you had also mentioned earlier about starting with the TikToks is another thing that might go maybe, like, under, not underappreciated, but, like, less talked about is you're, like, I feel like the team is on the forefront of, like, social media and reaching people in newer avenues. Like, you're not just putting out long, like, Facebook posts. Or, like, you guys are on the cutting edge of communication with like the younger audience. But it's also got to be interesting because these are not. It was like 2 years ago, no, people were just kind of dabbling with TikTok and things like that. Like, there were no established, like, hacks or things that worked. So, like, what was that like to just start out something like this new venture?
Yeah, I think just wanting to use as many platforms as possible to be able to talk about the things that were interesting to us. So, and we haven't done it in a while because, you know, it requires a whole bunch of effort. Like, you scroll through TikTok and, you know, there might be a minute long video and you just scroll past it. But, like, each of those takes a long time to make and cut and edit and put up there. So for people that were all pursuing, you know, becoming lawyers and stuff like that, it was just a little bit difficult for us to stay on top of it for me, for Steph, for Emily Costanza also. But I'm hopeful that it'll come back because I thought what they were doing, Steph and Em, they had a, it was called Misconduct. And
great name.
And I thought what they were doing was even making it more accessible. Like, it was informative news, but, you know, using whatever the current TikTok trends were. And I think that is more likely to get views than say, like what I was doing was like 2 minutes on, here's 2 minutes on Dan Snyder or 2 minutes on Les Miles. I think it's a little bit like we would hit our target audience on Twitter with that, but less so on TikTok, which is more designed for like kind of easy scrolling, I think. So we're, I guess, starting to figure out a better way, and I'm hopeful that it'll come back. But yeah, we've been able to add so many people that are good with like at the forefront of technology, obviously because they're young, but just good at it too. So like Brendan Duggan is also part of our group, and he founded an Instagram page. It's called Sideline Views, which now it's just Sideline, but has a ton of followers on there and posts really good content from all across the internet that is related to sports. So he's excellent. He's like our director of education. We've been able to do a couple of CLEs with him. So there's just like a lot of good people. And I think that part of that really is because that people are drawn to Dan. I think he has like a good personality. He's very accessible online. And then the rest of it is just because of all of the people that he's brought together. Like, I think we have a good group, a group that people are interested in being affiliated with. So I'm really flattered by the praise, and I'm really glad to be able to be a part of it.
I can understand. I was at one time, like a tier D TikTok celebrity. I got like 3,000 likes total.
Nice.
For like, I TikToked for like a month, but those, yeah, they would take so much. It would take so much effort. And I could only imagine when you see some of the ones, like someone's demonstrating how to bake something or cook something, yeah, and it comes through, mm-hmm, in a minute, and I'm like, that's hours of work. Like, they make it seem, yeah, so attainable. And I'm like, I'm not even going to trick myself into thinking that's possible, because it's going to take hours to do what they're doing. I'll have to pause it every 2 seconds and do the next step.
Yeah.
Something else I find fascinating, this is another thing I will give high praise to Conduct Detrimental for, sticking with important stories and events, exactly like you said with the Zion Williamson matter. Mm-hmm. The one that comes to mind that I think of is everything that happened with the Cleveland Guardians, mm-hmm, name.
Yep.
That was covered extensively with not just regurgitating the same information, with new information and theories and developments over the course of months. When like, so it's incredible that one, it's even being talked about, because nobody really was talking about it until it was actually like it broke through into the mainstream news. But you guys, you broke it into the mainstream news. So like, in the beginning, nobody was mentioning it. And two, the consistency to continue digging into something like that for months and months and months. How amazing was that? All like, how amazing is it to see that play out? But even if it hadn't become as like mainstream news as it was, I still feel like there's something intrinsically rewarding about following that kind of a journey from like beginning to end and putting all that work into it. I feel like that was like incredible in and of itself.
Yeah. And so like, if I'm being honest, at the outset of that one specifically, when Dan started talking about that on Twitter, I was like, all right, man, like who cares? Okay. There's a roller derby team with the same name. Great. I mean, the name is kind of dumb anyway, so like, who cares? They're not going to put up a fight. But then, you know, sometimes like the news, it's just made for you, right? So then they pursue action to try to enforce their rights to the name. I just thought it was phenomenal that, you know, Dan stuck with it long enough that it became something funny like that. And now he talks about it in his sports law class that he teaches. So yeah, I think that we as a group, and Dan Wallach also comes to mind when I think about all of these things, because he really like talks about things in the way that like other lawyers are like, wow, yeah, like that's really well stated. Like if you look, when his things blow up on Twitter, it's always like a bunch of check marks and people who are authorities in the field going, you got to read this thread, because Dan Wallach has really like boiled it down to what is going to happen next. And so to that end, like, he pursued that St. Louis Rams story, which ultimately ended in a settlement for the city of St. Louis. Dan Lust pursued the Nebraska and Big Ten story, and became like a cult hero in Lincoln. I think he's going to go speak there this week. And I think it definitely takes tenacity. You have to risk maybe even like annoying yourself by talking about it so much. But I think that is something that is very rewarding to watch. So I can only imagine what it is to like pursue something to the end. But when they cover something, especially the Dans, they really do a tremendous job. And you can see what Steph is doing right now with Dan Snyder. Like, she and I both have been on that, but like, she has had great theories, which, you know, probably have some credence to them in terms of, you know, why is Snyder acting the way that he's acting. And so for her and I also, like, having grown up in the DC area and even being fans of the Redskins and, you know, its subsequent forms, it's going to be very rewarding when, you know, hopefully Snyder is no longer the owner of the team. So, it's just fun to have the venue to pursue these stories. And really, like, we're doing it because we're interested in it. There's not some huge payday with any of these things. So I'm just really happy that we have a community that's interested in it, and we get great engagement on these stories, and it's led everyone to continue to improve their profiles.
I'll be hyping this stuff up too with my check mark when I pay the $8 for the Twitter. But you mentioned all the ones that I remember: the Dan Snyder story, the Guardians, the Nebraska, the Rams relocation. But it's crazy because you could trace those stories back through like multiple updates and episodes over like the past few years, when I could probably imagine all of them being touched on maybe once by like other like sports podcasts, sports business or sports law podcasts. But that's that separating thing where it's, you stick with it and there's compounding benefits, and you end up being seen as like by everyone as the leader in these areas or discussions, or if like the experts, because you just keep sticking with it. And like you said, like, I'm sure it's to the point of like annoying yourself about it. You're probably reading like and learning like the same kind of information at points over and over again, and until maybe breaking through to like the next to connecting like the next dot. But yeah, it's that consistency that is, you know, much appreciated.
Yeah, and I think that's the benefit of having such a niche audience who's interested in those sorts of things too. You know, if people were like, all right, move on to the next story, like, we're not going to engage with this story anymore, that might affect the way that we would pursue something as a group. But I think that our audience is interested in seeing things through, and so it's been great.
It's kind of like if you have like a favorite musician, like nothing's coming to mind right now, but it's weird because there's different, like how we were talking about different fans. It's like an interwoven community of people interested in different things for a sports team.
Yeah.
One of the things that come to mind is with music. Some people, as like a John Mayer fan, I love like Continuum. And everyone's like, oh, he just should like keep making Continuum-like albums. True. But on one aspect, it's like, no. Like, it's go do some like sob rock or whatever. Go do something like completely different or anything like that. Like you were saying, with fans of what you guys are doing, I'm sure there are some, I'm sure there are like a handful of people out there maybe who are just like, I move on to the next thing or whatever. But it's, it, that's the difference between, I guess, being hooked by like a certain story or being a fan and appreciating like the process.
Sure. Yeah.
Not a fully formulated thought.
No. I think that, yeah, I agree with you. I think that, I think of the Grateful Dead in that way, right? Like some people like certain eras. Some people prefer when they were more of like a folk band, and others like the more psychedelic stuff. Some people like when Donna sings and other people don't. So it's, there is that thing within it, I believe, but I'm grateful that the podcast and the community and the entire thing has shown continued growth. That's really, really a compliment to all of us.
Besides the importance of like the people and the relationships from your experience with Conduct Detrimental, what would your maybe next biggest takeaway be?
Yeah, I think something that I really appreciate in watching Dan is how he, Dan Lust, is how he like presents a story. I think that the ability to tell a narrative with all the characters and like pointing them out, I think that makes stories more interesting to follow. So that's something that I'm always trying to do. And so even when I was presenting for the class that I've been teaching now for the last few months, when I was crafting that first presentation, I was obviously soliciting feedback from a lot of people and really trying to focus on the different characters within each era of how the NCAA has behaved when it comes to athletes' rights. And I think that makes it more compelling. It makes it easier to understand and follow. For instance, and this was credit to Dan Matheson, who's a professor at the University of Iowa, who actually gave me this idea because he talks about this this story. But you think about how the NCAA has acted over time when it comes to NIL and the difference in the that even 20 years makes. There was a Olympic level skier named Jeremy Bloom who played football at the University of Colorado and wanted to keep playing for the Buffaloes, but he also wanted to take endorsement deals so that he could pursue his career as a skier. And the NCAA was like, no, you can't take those endorsement deals. Whereas now, we're at the point where we fight over whether the right types of endorsement deals are being taken. Like, are we setting women's sports back because, people are choosing to have a certain online persona. And so I think we've come a long way in that sense. And I hope that we don't reduce our gains to those types of discussions.
I had almost even forgot to mention. So you're teaching a class in addition to, I was going to mention you, while you were in the law school, founding a, I'm going to butcher the terminology because there's for NIL, I know there's the like clinics and collectives and that.
Yeah, it's a clinic. Yeah. So it's a sports and name, image, and likeness clinic at the University of Minnesota Law School. But a clinic is a class. It's not doctrinal. Like you're not learning like sitting down for a couple of hours every day and being lectured to about like civil procedure or something like that. We're learning by doing, but in order to get everyone on the same page at the outset, I did an hour long lecture on the history of name, image, and likeness so that everyone knew where we had started and what had happened in between and where we are now.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm. I see, I only know like the most surface level information about. And the literally the only name image like this news I get is from listening to the Conduct Detrimental. And I've been meaning to go look and read further into all this stuff. So I just assumed, like, by clinic, I was like, oh, it's like some set of like an office somewhere and people come in, you help them out or whatever. So it's more like a class. Kind of.
Yeah.
It's like a mixture of the two.
Yeah. So we meet every week for a class. We have four students. So it's like you said, we founded this last semester. It was, I think I mentioned that we had a great group of students in my year at law school who were interested in growing the sports law program. And so one of those students, Colton Messer, he was the president of our sports law association. We worked together with my mentor, Chris Pham, at Frederson and Byron, where I work. And all three of us together worked to found the clinic. And we had great help from the administration, who was very interested in empowering our idea, and from the firm's administration also, who has empowered Chris to start the sports law practice at our firm and now continue to grow it in this way. So yeah, we have a class, we have four students. And so Chris and I teach these students and kind of run them through different simulations. They're giving a presentation that they'll eventually give in front of student athletes. And they've worked with some student athletes on document review, contract review, that sort of thing. But we're just trying to prepare them to be attorneys in this space. But I think clinic classes are the most valuable thing that a law school can do, because experiential learning to me is very powerful. That's the only way that I've ever learned anything, is by doing it and failing and figuring out how I can do it better in the future. And experiential learning classes, the clinics allow you to do that in a very safe environment where there aren't, you know, big numbers really on the line. And so what we've been able to do is kind of have a space to talk about sports law generally, but we're specifically talking about name, image, and likeness and preparing them to do that work. So that's how it works. And there are all sorts of clinics. There are like 30-something clinics at the University of Minnesota, like, and everything from immigration to, I did like a business law clinic, which is fairly similar to this because it's transactional in nature. But yeah, there's all sorts of clinics where you can help real people. And so we're hoping to just do that also.
And you're doing this because, like with everything else, the incredible part is you're interested in this, which is,
yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, if I could tell, I mean, you could tell, like, all growing up through now, whatever anyone's teaching or you're taking a class for anything, it comes across if the person teaching it is really interested in what they're teaching. Like, I just remember like a risk and uncertainty class I took for like economics in college. And the professor was I could tell this guy freaking loved every concept from every lecture we went over. And he just brought this like maniacal energy to everything he was showing. And a good chunk of it went over my head. And I had to keep like really just like trying to digest all of it, but it made it so much better. Like it just made the experience incredible. It's not something that's very common, I would say.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Showing that passion is fundamental, I think, to being a good teacher of anything. And really just as a personality trait, I think is very valuable. If you show somebody that you're genuinely interested in something, like if you were to tell me, you know, you're really into plants, like, you know, I've killed every house plant that I've ever had, but I would love to hear from somebody who's really into it, because I don't know, that's just a very attractive quality in people, to be passionate about things. And so that's another thing that I think that I've learned along the way. So yeah, it's awesome. We try to show how passionate we are about it, but that's something that I've also just been struck by within our students. Like, I've never had a class before. Like, I've never taught before. This is the first experience for me where I'm teaching. And to teach at this level also, with students who are, they're phenomenal. Like, I'm so impressed by everything that they do and the energy that they put into the things that we ask them to do. It's been an awesome experience, and knowing, and I think that they enjoy this part of it too, knowing that we are not only at the forefront of this space, the name, image, and likeness space, but that our program is so unique, in that I don't think that there's another one like it in the country, where you have a large law firm that is supporting the work that you do, and they're willing to do this work for student athletes pro bono, where it's attached to a large university system, where they have Division I Power 5 sports, and that you're getting to actually practice this with student athletes and influencers from around the country. I think that they recognize how powerful that is, and that they're really taking advantage of it also. So the entire experience has been tremendous, and I would love to see more programs like this around the country, but we feel very blessed to have ours.
I'm sure there will be. It's like, that's the equivalent of the Cleveland Guardians story. You know, it's got to start with one. You got to start with one, and eventually it'll catch on.
Yeah.
I have to close out with the question that the podcast is named after. You've got so much stuff going on. If you have you had a 25th hour, you have one extra hour in your day, what's the best use of that hour? And I have no idea, maybe sleep. I know you've got so many things going on. What would be the best use of that extra hour?
I don't know. It might be a little corny. I think I'd probably just spend time with my loved ones. If I had more time, I think that's how I would spend it. I think that, you know, we're all so limited in the amount that we can do. And not only that, but the amount that we can do with like energy and passion. And we, you know, you have to siphon into certain areas. So if I had an extra hour, I think that's how I would use it to like, just, you know, spend time with my loved ones and be able to put all my focus and energy and love into that. As opposed to having to think about 10 different things.
Oh, I completely agree on that one. Well, this was incredible. I'm incredibly thankful. This was absolutely amazing. It was amazing, one might say. Thank you so much. I learned a lot. I can't wait to see everything you're up to next. This was amazing. Thank you, Taryn.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Thank you again to Taryn. Even if you have just the slightest interest in anything sports related, you'll absolutely find value in subscribing to the Conduct Detrimental podcast and newsletter. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share with a friend, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, or even take an extra couple minutes and leave a written review. As always, thank you for listening, and until next time.